Welcome to my podcast called You Must Be Out of Your Mind. My name is Dr. Don Wood. Everyone has experienced some trauma at times during their life. These traumatic events and experiences create a significant impact on how your mind works on a day-to-day basis. At the same time, creates long-term effects on your emotional and physical health. It will interfere with your ability to stay present and in the moment. After years of research, I used my knowledge of neuroscience to create what I call a memory reset. This memory reset reduces and eliminates the impact of the trauma and allows you to experience peace and clarity. My podcast will share many stories of people experiencing similar symptoms to you and how their lives have been positively impacted by our TIP program. I can't wait to share with you how the impossible is possible and why you must be out of your mind. And there it is. Well, welcome to another episode of You Must Be Out of Your Mind. And as you know, I always bring on great guests who have so much to offer, a lot of stuff. And generally, the goal is to try to find people that have things to offer what we're doing and complement us. And today is a perfect example. I got Sabrina Runback, and she is amazing in helping healthcare entrepreneurs really find their footing. So, Sabrina, welcome to You Must Be Out of Your Mind.
Thanks, Dr. Wood, and thanks, everyone, for joining us. You can be doing anything that you choose us, so we appreciate you.
So your background is healthcare. You say that you got burnt out as a surgeon. So tell us what happened. Like, what did you experience to get you now working in this area? What was your big pivotal moment?
Yes, I think all of us have these transitions in our career, whether it's meant to be or you choose that for yourself. I was just that typical little busy bee. I'm the only child, only girl in a family of all boys within my immediate family. So if you think about that, right, traditional Asian family or any culture that's very traditional is that got a good grade, marry off, have your car and kids, you're set. And for me, it's like an internal struggle because I know that's not me. I know the way that I feel, the way that I feel achievement is a lot more beyond that. And when I was little, I think what's fun is that I realized every single skill is very much transferable. So since I was little, I was on dance team. I was doing fun stuff, artsy things. I was in a choir. And then I also was in the nerdy things like research, pipette, and figure out the books and like zapping them, doing my neuro research, right? And I got two bachelor's, two master's, got into medicine. I was just so excited. And I know I'm more surgical. I'm more hands-on. I love patient education. Don't get me wrong. I created plenty of program on screening, cancer screening versus engaging with patients and making them see how do you assess your own ability to take care of yourself. I love all that. And when I got into it, I picked heart and lung surgery because that's where I find that, wow, you know, heart surgery is number one killer in the world. And Despite all the bugs and COVID, whatever you guys believe, is still the number one disease. Mm-hmm. And when I work with them, it's because they really don't have any options. It's either surgery, we can deem them, are you even safe enough to go to surgery? And a surgical specialty or intervention for anybody really is, would I expand your mortality, right? Your life expectancy. Or would we be able to improve your quality of life? Means perhaps you're not huffing and puffing, right? Perhaps you're not going to be having chest pain all the time. Perhaps you're not going to be so dizzy or pass out because your heart just can't compensate for your body. Now, that level of stress and also pride put me into a spot where I was working 80 plus hours a week. I was on call all the time. And to the point where there's one day I was having a fever of 101 degrees and couldn't even focus that much. But I was still in there in the operating room with my attending physician and doing it. And the next day I had to pull myself out. But the response on the other side had been, Sabrina, you didn't thought to tell us sooner that you're sick? Like you didn't know that I was sick already. Right. I felt like when we're getting in the hat of such a business hat, we start forgetting at the end of the day, we're providers, patient-centered care. That's the perception we need to give for everybody else around us. So by research, right, guess what's the number one factor in peak performance between high salary and your bonus, more training, more autonomy, and more appreciation? Dr. Boy, what do you think?
What's the number one, like, strength?
Factor. Like, factor? Yeah, factor in productivity and team retention.
Well, it's got to be their nervous system staying regulated, being able to stay fully present in the moment, not right, dealing with too many things. They're not multitasking.
Right. So the reward is really that area of appreciation of like, how do you appreciate yourself being in the moment? And then how do you gain appreciation? Because we've seen financial factors are short, right? People can get very excited for that short duration. Then they're like, okay, so if I have to work extra amount of time or project or amount of patient load, then I can get that bonus. Then sometimes the effort is not evenly distributed, right? People may be making that final effort just to beat and go, right? You've seen that a lot, like in your bonus comes around. And then we know training, unless there's a career ladder and that person cares about the title, cares about that, they also wouldn't really meant to go down that path. So we always believe that the reason that we're not being appreciated the way that we want it to be, I believe, is not just because people are not seeing how hard you're doing, how much effort, and how much result you're creating. It's also because us, we are not showing them the right way. We're not creating the right relationship for them to see that we're shining at every moment.
Right.
So in that sense, then we can say, oh, okay, so there are five love languages. There are five appreciation languages. But you wouldn't know that unless you have conversations with these people. And as leaders, right, founders, like people who we create a businesses, organization, we're the innovators of this big, amazing thing in healthcare. It's not about knowing every single person. It's about having the right people as managers, leader, directors that really understand your group and placing the right talent in the right position that align with their own internal drive so they can stick with you, right?
And yes, we were talking about that earlier before we started about what you do and how you handpick, right, the right team around them. Because if you don't get the right team around you that don't understand you, right, you'll probably clash, right?
Yeah. And I think a lot of us are just simply hire even ourselves, right? We're just like, well, I don't have enough resource. Well, we keep putting ourselves into that lack state. And therefore, when we need something, we're constantly just grab whatever body that makes sense or perhaps makes sense on paper. Oh, this person have all the certification alkalized. That must be the best person. But I always believe from my training from positive intelligence is that success, guess what? Only 50% of the true measurement for achievement and success is based on IQ, EQ, years of experience, alkali. And then the other 50% is how well and how quickly you can handle negativities that things just didn't go well. How quickly you can flip that switch by identifying, training your brain, and then get yourself into that higher level brain, right? What we call SAGE, more powerful, more activating, be able to be more creative, problem solver, and more empathetic, not only toward that person, but toward yourself, right? So I think that's where I made a pivot is when I realized everything that I'd done to that point where I was burning out, I was running all these programs, I reformatted a team. And then even though people are wanting to give me a title to do that, I still feel like, whoa, you know what? I was the person who tossed the rock in the middle of the pond and created all this ripple effect. I have to take responsibility in that, right? I have to take 100% ownership, just like the Navy SEALs book, right? And if we don't, then it seems like everything is out of control. So I went back to what I did before medicine in neuroscience and public health. Now, all this journey, I was still having support technically, right? I'm a surgical PA. I'm always working with different attendings and team, other MPs and nurses, whatnot. It's not like you're alone, right? Just like you, Dr. Wood, you have a whole team, right? You're never alone, but sometimes it can still feel lonely because people don't understand how we process information, how we do things. And then a certain level of a high level strategy and the individual implementation, there can be a gap of communication. So I have to take back to say, what does that mean? When I used to do community assessment, really focusing on what self-care, how is that correlate to self-efficacy, correlate to literacy, and correlating to the action? And how can we mingle and match things together? And instead of feeling like we have all this knowledge, we can continue to learn because we love learning in healthcare, right? Every day there's new paper published, new research, new this and that method. But is it really about learning anymore? Or is it about extracting the right information, the right people, and make sense of them cohesively and no longer putting a burden on the individual leaders to say, you should have known what you need help with. You should have known what the problem is. But having that cohesive support to already do the assessment so we don't feel alone. We shouldn't be able to say we have all the answers or we don't know what we don't know and just help me with X, Y, Z. That's too much burden on us.
Well, it's almost the way, I'm a big sports guy, so I love sports. And I always talk about, so you take a guy like Tiger Woods, who's the greatest golfer and always probably considered the world at or at all time. Why did he have a coach? Right? He's the greatest. His coach couldn't beat him on his best day. Right? But he has a coach because he can't see the little things that he may not have noticed are changing in his swing. But the coach knows his swing so well, he can pick up that at the top of your swing, your club face shut, you know, 2 degrees. I mean, it's that kind of precision when you get to that kind of level. He may not feel that or see that. So without somebody there, you know, like doing what you're doing, right, is to say, listen to what I've got in terms of my experience of finding the right team for you, finding the right strategies for you, right? Because a lot of the entrepreneurs, me included, we have great vision. You know, that's how we got to where we are. But executing that is always may not be our strength. We may not be the best person for every single job. But the problem is when you start out, you do have to do every job. So you start thinking, you know, well, I'm pretty good at all that. No, you're not.
It's such a great point is that we believe we can solve everything. We are intelligent, right? We are. And then we've gone through so much different things in life. Perhaps you create multiple businesses, have some ups and downs in that. Perhaps you even sold some really profitable business. But when you step into this new position, you can transfer all those knowledge back. However, we cannot be, one of my friends says that the chief of everything, right? If we are the chief of everything, how can you actually juggle all different plates? Eventually something is going to drop or all of them going to drop at the same time. And it's about truly be your prime. And then perhaps some people are not able to sit on that CEO side, right? The chief executive officer means you actually are really good at big level strategy and creating different steps, different means, different verticals for other to carry out the innovation. And in the top of pyramid of your true high level creator, right, founder level, it should really be three roles. The person who have a keen eye and really good at innovation and creating that innovation and continue to improve based on the problem that's around it. And then the second row is the person who create impact and income, just because you have a solution to a problem, do people care about it? And how many lives you're changing, right? How many, or perhaps it's the environmental. Well, if we stick in healthcare, yeah, it's what is the impact on those people's lives? And would people actually see the impact? And then you as an entity can stay profitable and keep growing, right? And then the third person is actually what the CEO is a person who actually be the true high-level strategist, the conductor, make this idea and the impact into reality. And these, we know any structure, right? A triangle is always the strongest. So when you have that strong sense of triangle, then things can be easier. And when we're starting, perhaps you're more of an innovator and the executive, and you need someone to create that impact for you. And perhaps you are really good at business relationship building, creating a profit and closing, and you have someone else who's the innovator, right? So maybe you're sitting on all three or two of those roles, but we do need to have that solid foundation to say, who are we? How can we bounce ideas off each other? And perhaps those people on your board, they're not full-time, and that's okay. Most of us have a somewhat of fractional or part-time support. But once you start going down that road, then we have to think about what else that you need for any business entity to truly be flourishing, right? And so I believe there's three domains: the culture and people, the awareness and visibility, and then the third one is your protection and structure, right? Dr. Wood, do you feel like you guys have that, right? Because I remember I talked to you about those three major domains.
Yeah, it's very important. And I think the thing is, the hardest thing as an entrepreneur is to give up some of those roles, right? And then you have the double-edged sword is if you give up that role, you still have to make sure that you're watching that the person is actually doing their job, right? And what do they say? You can never fire somebody too soon. You can always fire them too late, but you can never fire them too soon. So that's the hard part is finding that balance in that team that can actually work together. And that's the culture that you're talking about. So right. If you've got a company, you know, that you're helping, how do you help them, especially in the very beginning when they don't have a lot of resources? So they don't have, they're not a, you know, Microsoft who can, you know, get the cream of the cream, right? How do you find that person? How do you get them at the right time and the right structure and price?
Great question. We all have growing pain, and especially in the beginning. And I was just having a conversation yesterday with someone, brilliant PhD, and they created and has a sports medicine background. So we know trauma in sports are huge. So they have now as a novelty concept on how do you identify and detect early on for some of these brain traumas, and then you can really tailor treatment afterwards for various other modalities.
Are you tired of dealing with stress, anxiety, panic attacks, depression, even feeling broken? Have traumatic events and experiences in your life created post-traumatic stress for you? Perhaps you're an athlete, an executive, trying to reach that next level of performance. Well, there's nothing wrong with you, and there's nothing wrong with your mind. Your mind is dealing with some glitches and error messages as a result of these traumatic events or disturbing events earlier in your life. It's interfering with your ability to stay present because the memory keeps on looping, activating your nervous system. I've helped thousands of people deal with anxiety, panic attacks, depression, feeling that sense of brokenness. We can clear that in as little as 4 hours. Check out our website, inspiredperformanceinstitute.com, and check out some of the stories and testimonials. Some of these may relate to what you've experienced in your life, and we look forward to helping you reach your next level of performance. And there it is.
Now, what's good about her is that, yes, she is now sitting on the CEO and the funding, trying to get funding. And we also know nowadays funding is very tight and people wanted to see you have revenue. But for people who just have a concept and they're still building the protocol, it's tough, right? If we don't have funding, I can't build my protocol. If I don't have protocol, how do I create pilots to truly show this is validated, whatnot? But what she did really also well is already connecting with different organizations to say, yes, this is what we're lacking. So that's the marketing research part, right? So for people who are started, yes, you do have to do your market research first. If you have someone who's in your network that can even just bounce ideas off, that's amazing. If not, then you should start by talking to a marketing expert. When people wanted to make those introductions for investors and or high-level, maybe app development people, but if you introduce too soon and you have no presence, like we don't understand what you're about, you don't really have a good, even just a linking page need to be solid, right? If anybody search your name, linking always pop out first because they're bought by Microsoft. And you should have at least somewhat of a website, not just things you throw together so you can show an investor. If the branding, which is not just about color and fonts, is about the story, the mission, the clarity on what you think you can provide is there, it will actually do more damage than not, right?
What's interesting too is when you look at that is I'm not really good at that. I don't really have an eye for that kind of detail. I know what I like. So if somebody puts something together, I can go, oh, I like that. It may not even be effective, but I may look at it and think it looks good. So that's one of the hardest things is how do you know, right? Especially if that's not your strength. I'm not a creative person visually that way, but I can at least determine that I like the look of it. How do you know it's going to be effective? Because here's been my experience. A lot of people say, oh, I can do this. And then they look at what you've done and they go, oh, I never would have done any of that. You should have done it this way, right? And but then the next person would come along and say, oh, I can't believe you did it that way. You should have done it this way. How do you navigate that field?
Right. And I believe that comes, sometimes people just have that intuitive eye. And when you start, it should really be searching for someone to give you that analysis on who are you as an individual? What's your intrinsic value and mission? We have to start there when you come up with these ideas and novelty. And how is that going then create the matching? Because every color even have a message, right? And then the peace calmness of blue, but it's also strong royalty and fluidity versus the bold orange and brightness of the sun yellow. So sometimes it's not to go nitty gritty into those things, but saved up enough, at least get a brand consultant to get you started. So they can work not only having a copywriter just to get your language right, because some you don't have to build a website to show. If you even just have a one pager, you have that same message on your LinkedIn profile. You have something that embodies what you're about, what you're trying to solve, and then what's the direction and your perception of that. And that's where people can even get started. Because we need to first, we always say, captivate, right? So my four C's of creating those strong network and relationship is number one is captivate, because we wanted to make sure when you go pivot, go have a conversation with a investor. It's not that they're just going to open up their wallet, give you a check, right? That's not reality. It's sometimes you have 20 minutes to present. Sometimes you only have five, sometimes only 1 minute. How do you build a storyline? And the importance, whether it's your story, a patient story, or some other story that you truly have, and turn that into a 20-minute presentation down to a five, down to a one, and be able so concisely say that.
It's interesting when you're saying that story about how important it is to captivate. I remember this is an old story about a guy who was in the printing business, and he was just starting out. And this is back long, long time ago. And there was a big, big company that did a lot of printing, and he was always trying to see if he could get in and get their business or a piece of their business. And it was the actual owner that made every sales presentation. He listened to them personally. So he would get an appointment, he would go in, he would introduce himself, and then never get the business. So he kept going back, but he said that every single time he went back, the guy never remembered him. He says he'd have to reintroduce himself as if he had never been there before. He says, so what he did one time is he went in, he had a hat on. This is in the older days when men used to wear hats, right? And he goes in with his hat, and he walks in, and as he's approaching the desk of the owner, he takes his hat, he puts it on the floor, he stamps on it, flattens it, puts it back on his head, and walked out, right? And it was just like, what in the world happened? The next time he came back, the guy remembered him, and he got some business from him. So it was sort of pretty unusual way, but it sort of falls in line with what you're just talking about. If you don't make an impression, right, they're not going to listen to you. So you've got to stand out. And sometimes this guy had literally seconds. And obviously what he was doing hadn't worked up to that point. So he figured, I guess I have nothing to lose. The guy's either going to never let me back in again, but I'm not getting business anyway. So he took a chance.
Exactly. It's about being a unique self. And we know in general sense, our own story and how our approach to people is going to be that unique factor. And if you don't have it all prepared, it's just a spiel that you talk and really rapidly fire, people are not going to really hook to who you are. So when we think about the concept, always see everybody as a connector that can support you. So I always say, turn a connection into a champion. And not thinking, oh, that's the person who's going to lead me to funding, right? It's that person can lead me to multiple things that really help me or my mission to grow. And so the burden of that right? Like that anxiety of what do I say? I'm like, I'll get nervous. It's toned down. And when you present it that way, it's more of a human to human, having a real true connection. And even better if you can look that person up, or when you go into a group and do some background research of each person. So you have a sense of who they are and build some kind of bridge to connect with that person. So number one, we do have to captivate in some degree and don't overcomplicate it, right? Just even have your message storyline that beats out having a beautiful website that you spent all this money, but you have to take 2 months to even get started. We want you to get started right away with something simple and even just as simple of updating your LinkedIn profile. And number two is we wanted to create. So what are we creating is knowing what type of circle you need to tap into, what type of people you truly should speak to. Different strategies that we use from a media standpoint. If you're someone who needs to have more people to get to know you, we can take the media route, just like speaking on podcasts. Because we know if you're speaking on these national, local, state TV, you actually have no idea who's actually watching those TV shows. It's so diluted versus podcasting. You know exactly who are these hosts positioning, what type of topic can they like to talk about. Therefore, you also know what type of people are listening to those shows. So it's very targeted messaging to support those people and to get them who are already audio listeners to have a different idea popping into their mind. And it's not just about speaking, right? Like now we're initially pretty much you are in front of the right people. But you're just that one time. So when you want to nurture those relationships, it's about taking those speaking engagement and amplify them into authority building way that repurpose that speaking engagement into multiple different like blog, a newsletter, a short videos that you can put out because people like sound bites. And perhaps it is also turning that into multiple different social blogs and social media graphics. Not only you're helping the show host to amplify their show, but you're also leveraging that authority to be like, it's not just me, right? It's not just I found the solution, my story, but someone else recognized my ability and who I am as a person or who I am as an innovator to solve a problem. So that's also a key thing when we're leveraging media and especially podcasting, when we're going to increase our visibility. And then once we have that solution foundation, then we can go to the next level. It's about how do you find these high level stakeholders, right? Those who are also founders, they're also investors, they're also executives from other organizations that can help you to make that one introduction, which I have done multiple times, that one payer connection become 26 million patients of capacity for onboard and connection reach, right? So how can you make those is that you know how to captivate, you have some authority online presence, and then different ways people also talk about you. And now when you are in front of the right people with a higher stake, then you know how to expand and shorten your messages. And when they look you up, they also understand that you're not just someone coming from the left field, just because you're another professional, you're another, let's say, doctor or nurse, just because you have a title, it doesn't give you the credibility of saying how you are as an entrepreneur, as someone who can create these other area of bigger impact.
I like that. That's really good. What you were saying about the authority is really good. And that takes some time, though, right, to build. You can't get that. Even if you are the authority, you just can't assume that you're going to be the authority unless you do those kinds of things. So of all the platforms, do you have a favorite platform that you think helps build authority in healthcare? Would it be LinkedIn?
Yeah, I definitely believe LinkedIn is the number one place. Now, some people have used Twitter, but it can be diluted. It's hard to find information. But LinkedIn is a place where you have your profile that's very easily searchable. What's important is not only you have your phone name on there as your own name, right under you have that heading. That heading should be telling people not just about all your titles. That's not really helpful, right? Because other people might have similar title, but who you are, how you help them, or what's your mission, those things should be in there. So like myself, my LinkedIn says, help healthcare entrepreneurs to increase visibility and credibility so they can accelerate their mission and profitability, right? So there's direction on who you work with and how, plus the result. Then I can also add, I'm a podcaster, I'm a keynote speaker, I'm an author, right? Those other things that you wanted to show that you're capable to do and you're really good at.
Very good. So going from your background to what you're doing now is quite different, right? So what would you say is the key to your success in what you're doing? I mean, I can pretty much tell. You got a passion for this, right? You've obviously got skill, but you're very passionate about what you're doing. And you sound like you're highly skilled. You've done the research. You've done all the things that you need to do to figure out how to make it work. But what do you think your best strength is? So if you're going to work with somebody, what would you say? Here's what I can do better than the average person you're going to ever deal with.
Yes, appreciate that question. I has been someone who loves to create opportunity for other people. So I love to say, I like to sit in that operational side and business development side of creating the right partnership and relationship for you. And many people, that's what they come to me is, Sabrina, seems like you have a great online presence. You always have an eloquent way to convey a message. And even when people, I do these short, here's a 90 second, how you would say about who you are and what do you need to help with to others in any networking situation. And people will be like, hey, let me record this. This sounds good. And despite that, they have been a marketing expert for years, just because I'm really good at taking a complex information and shorten it in a way that actually makes sense. And sometimes we are so excited to talk about everything that we do, or the scientist side of us just wanted to talk about process. This is how I made a sense of this. This is how we diagnose this, that this is blah, blah, blah. But most people don't care about the how. They care about how is this going to matter to me,
right?
Like if I'm going to be an advisor, to be a support to help you, what is that for me? What do I have to do? Or does that sound like something that I'm interested in? If that's not clear, means your ask is not clear enough. People is always going to be like, that sounds amazing. Congratulations. And then they walk away, right?
Right. Yeah.
And then the flip side is, if some people will be like, oh, Sabrina, I don't like to ask for help. And sometimes I don't know what I'm asking for. I'm not prepared. Or if I just ask, seems like I'm a taker. Well, yeah, but if you don't know what to ask, that means you have no idea where you're going with your business, even to start with. And if you don't ask, it's not so much about asking. Asking is actually one of the three confidence level that we measure, right? Inner confidence is that you have the skill, you have the ability, you see your core genius, you can just do. Now, social confidence, that's what we're saying, is your ability to ask a question and stand behind to say, I don't know this, but I love to find out how, or I would love to connect with the right people with this problem I have, right? That's confidence itself, to be able to speak that. And so when we're able to do that, how do we then take into social psychology, right? There's the takers, the givers, and the matchers. So yes, we don't want it to be a taker. And we also actually don't want it to be a matcher. Matcher just means you always feel like equal exchange. And when things are not equal, you feel inner disappointment, right? You always need it to somehow offshift. So when we're truly creating relationship, it's never going to be match, match, match. You give me this, you give me that, right? It's never about that. It's about how do we all work together, mingling. Eventually, everything will be pretty much even out. But it's about contributing. So the last sense of at the end, when we perceive an introduction, is that after you do a very clear ask, you also think about how do I create a win-win situation in the space that we're creating. Perhaps you know that person really well. Then you can propose something. Perhaps you don't, then you can ask, what can I do to help you at this moment? Would it be open up my network to think about what type of people or entity, company, intervention that you like to be involved with? Or perhaps is that, oh, I have someone who I really trust that are a great person on compliance and looking into your company. Would that be helpful, right? Like, think about what other way you can contribute to their win and not just be like, well, I have this resource, I'm just going to do that, right? Like it's about knowing where they are, but also proposing. Sometimes we don't know, right? But as we propose some ideas, their gears are running and then they can have that relationship built so you can start to progressively move forward together. So my best genius, I believe, is that connector role. I can help people to captivate, to grow in front of the right audience and right partnership, and knowing how to convey that relationship to become a win-win so they can both accelerate. And that also means we need to think about our business in those three major domains me and Dr. Woods talked about earlier. And then, so you have culture, people, means your HR, people who do the hire and who do the structure of how do you get the right people. Then you have a business intuitive, means How do you align who you are, your mission, your process with the people that you hire and with the people that you need to do business with, right? That type of alignment. And third in that category is the business relationship expert. So are you truly understanding that the person that you brought on board is in the right place with the right talent, with the right internal motivation? So that relationship with their own team is solid. So they will stick with you. And now that they voice their opinion, it's always got bounced back. And then almost like you're talking to a wall, right? No one's being appreciated. Right. And then the last part about that area is the chief behavior officer. So someone who's very in tuned into psychological profiling, different way of people communicating from their how they draw energy, how their belief system format. So that person can be really good at finding the problem that exists, analyze it, and then give solutions, right? So that's your people and culture. Now, sometimes when you start, you got to have one person to do everything. And then you start filling these spot in, right? And then most of people are, I think they're so staying in tune of the communication and visibility part, which is the marketing expert, right? What's your brand? How do you perceive this? How do you make sense of it? What's the present online? What's the present in person? And then second is your sales expert. Like, what's the pipeline, right? What are the channels that you have to go for? How do you really, when the lead comes from the marketing team, that you can actually convert them to a true client? And then third is your PR, right? We can say PRs through podcasting, print media, TV, all those fun stuff. But how do you leverage that for authority building and lead generation? Not just I talk, what now, right? And lastly, it's just like what I say is in that business relationship building. How can you create the solid relationship with the outside that they continue to want to refer more clients to you, and you consistently grown that relationship and not just like, oh, they have one introduction, you never heard from them again, right?
Right. No, so I love everything you're saying. I think it's great. Something that I think we would be interested in talking to you more about, because I think you offer a very different perspective. It sounds fascinating, because there's so many areas that, you know, we're continuing to look at to figure out how to continue to grow and build our message, you know, because we have different ways to deliver our message. You know, obviously people can meet with me one-on-one, but I'm a limited resource. We're never going to grow the business with me. So we have an online program, so we can actually deliver this, you know, through a digital format, and people can do it in the privacy of their own home. And we now are filming it in VR. So we're going to have a virtual reality format for it, which I think is going to be really cool. And then I can do it in groups. So I can sit down with 25 people in a room and take them through our program, and nobody has to share any of their traumas. And then once we clear their traumas, then we focus on the performance side. And so multiple ways to deliver it. The big thing is getting that message out, you know, because we can eliminate anxiety, panic attacks, post-traumatic stress without any medication, with very simply. It's just really sort of a glitch that people are experiencing. We got a patent on it. So we've got so much potential. The key is messaging. And that's the area that I think is the most important to us. So we've got we're sort of like, we're the band, right? We just need people to get us booked. Right? We'll show up and perform, right? The key is getting somebody out there, getting the gigs, right? And that's very important. So go ahead.
I think that's a great realization. And whether it's surprising or not, most people are in that row, right? Most of people is like, oh, I have this creation program. I know it works. It's amazing. It's awesome. I just needed people to know about us. And therefore that, if you think about, that's your last cohort, is you need to have that structure and people role, right? The people who are operational project managers, so they can make sense of all the program, how you do a one-on-one group virtual reality, and that is cohesive. And that person also is the conductor with the rest of your team, right? Rest of the 12, which means your legal side compliance, your technology infrastructure, right? Because you're delivering on certain technology platform, make sure when the patients or people, end user, are experiencing, they're not confused, that it's easy to get to, there's no glitches, right? And there's a good way to track them on what stage, whether they're just beginning, just got to know you, you needed to give them more of a leeway of understanding who you are, versus people who are already in the cohort, they're just needed to go to the next step of understanding who you are, or people who are already being in the program, you continue to support them in the long run, right? And then you have the last person who's bookkeeping and funding. Yes, we needed to at least think is profit first, right? In mind, if we're always building and putting all the money back to our business, you never really be able to pay yourself or grow. That is also very heart-aching, right? Like, where, what I'm doing if I'm creating these multiple jobs for my team, but I take zero, that is also discouraging. So we always think of profit first in that sense. And for you guys, it's about thinking, yes, that messaging, right? Like, what's the story that you continue to tell in a brief moment through podcasting, through you being on stage, or what else that you're doing? Right. So if people start going into, especially business like you guys, it's been surviving and flourishing for many years. Now it's about we're creating different areas that we can deliver this better to take you as the sole practitioner away. So you're not always in it all the time. Right. And then it's like, who are the people on your marketing team to do some research on the existing pool of people that you already helped, right? Ask them some tangible questions and try to find the newer group. What else do they want, right? How would they be more likely to go into the group training or the virtual reality, or do they still drawn to the one-on-one, right? Understanding where people are, then you can create more of a message targeting to those and funneling into one of your three levels. Right. And also depend on what you already built in your sales and marketing pipeline, then to do a different assessment on how well you're growing in those aspects.
Beautiful. Well, Sabrina, it was such a pleasure having you on. We've learned a lot. I've learned a lot. I don't know about anybody else, but I've definitely learned a lot. If people want to get a hold of you, people are looking for the kind of help that you're just discussing, how do they reach out to you? What's the best way to find you?
Yeah, I'm very active on LinkedIn. If you like to find me there, connect with me, send me a private message. I also have plenty of resources from my podcast called The Provider's Edge on my website, on LinkedIn as well. And you, no matter where you connect with me, whether it's through my website or through LinkedIn, I always love to have a brief virtual coffee chat with anyone to see if myself or people in my network really is the better support for you and to help you to get to where you need to go. Because I'm all about synergy, is cohesiveness of alignment. And that means it sometimes it's giving you that tactical strategy. And sometimes it's really just introduce you to the right people that can open up your mind and your network as well. And some other time is about, well, maybe you're a good fit for my high-level inner circle networking group. And those people are in the similar or higher level of success that you can truly learn from them.
Beautiful. Well, it was such a pleasure. We'll put some of that information too about you in the notes. So if anybody wants to reach out to you, but Sabrina, I can't thank you enough for all your information. I love your passion. You're contagious, right? So that's beautiful. So I appreciate you being here, and I appreciate everybody listening to another episode of You Must Be Out of Your Mind. And there it is.